I like these days because the kids get to hang out with us for the sermon time, which means I get to, you know, think about my sermon a little differently. And I get to think about Jesus's sermon a little differently, too, because today we are continuing through Jesus's sermon from a mountain, from the Gospel of Matthew. Sometimes you may hear people say the Sermon on the Mount. All that means is he was literally on a mountain and he started talking. Nothing fancy about it. What it is, though, is the longest continuous collection of Jesus's teaching that we have in the Bible, which feels really weird, right? We spend a lot of time here talking about how to follow Jesus. But we don't have whole bunches of books that he wrote about it. Nobody had a tape recorder kind of following him along. There's not a documentary we could watch about it. What we have are the stories of people who followed him, what they wrote down, and some of the things that he said that they were most impressed by. Including this. So you know it had to be really impressive that they remembered and wrote all of this down. I will try a test of this later today. I'll just ask you to write down all of the things that I'm about to say for the next 15 minutes. Even better, we'll compare from one to the other. People always ask me, how come there are four Gospels? Well, let me ask four different people what I just said, and we'll see how different we end up. Last week, we heard a section of the sermon that was about blessings. Sometimes we call this the Beatitudes. Everything has a fancy name, I'm sorry. But the Beatitudes just mean the blessings. And so Jesus started showing us that in God's eyes, the ones who receive blessings are those who the world have often not considered too blessed. Jesus offered blessings for people who were hurting, or who felt alone, or were sad. He said God was particularly worried about and with them and blessing them. Here today, Jesus is going to start talking to his followers, and I think us, asking us, if we're going to follow him, to imagine being in the world in a different way.
Matthew chapter 5, 30 to 20. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be withstood? It's no longer good for anything, but is thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket, but on the lampstand and gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good work and give glory to your Father in heaven. The Law and the Prophets. Do not think that I have come to abolish the Law or the Prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to fulfill. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth pass away, no one stroke of a letter will pass from the law until all is accomplished. 34, whoever breaks one of the last of the death commandments and teach others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teach them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven.
The fun thing about Youth Sundays is you never know how they're going to turn out until you kind of show up. And so I'm getting kind of surprised and amazed as I go myself. Okay, so salt. This is, in fact, incredibly fancy salt. I'm going to have to try and put this back in a bag later. Who likes salty food? Okay, who are my sweet people? Salty people, I think we're outnumbered. It's okay. They're wrong. It's all right. What sort of things do you like to eat that are salty?
Potato chips.
Yeah. Potato? Okay. What do you think? I think that's Sour Patch Kids? That's more sour. Okay, yes. There's a little kind of saltiness to it. Yes. Other salty things? Pretzels? French fries. Potatoes are getting a lot of play here.
Tortilla chips,
kids, things that you like to eat? So, well, we're going to get to that in just 1 second. How about things you like to make that might be salty?
Hard-boiled
eggs, okay. I'm sorry? Pickles. Ooh, okay, got a little salt to it. Yes, good. Anything else? Okay, who likes to bake? How does it work without the salt? Not so good. Okay. I'm sorry? Yeah. I thought, no. Okay, so here's my test for you. If you bake your bread, or you salt your potato chips, or your pickles, if it tastes like salt, have you done it right? No, not really. Salt is this amazing stuff in the world. It was even more amazing in Jesus' time. Well, let's go ahead and say, we've thought that salt is pretty amazing in the last few days in particular. Jesus didn't know so much about salt and ice and how important that would be to our lives living in Maine. But salt is this amazing thing, right? It kind of comes out of the earth. We use it in all sorts of different ways. In some places, in some cultures, salt has actually been used as money. Yeah, some places people have exchanged salt like they would exchange money. It's really valuable. And yet, if you taste salt, that's not really what it's for. What's it for? What does it do? Why do we add salt to things? Seasons, yep. How about Allianz? I'm sorry? It does melt ice, yep. Sometimes you can use that to make fun things happen with like some different types of solutions. Susan?
It's a preservative.
It is a preservative too, yes. My point is to say, if you've seasoned your food correctly and you taste salt, you've done it wrong. So Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth. How do we fit into the world? If you go home tonight and you're tasting salt and not steak, and I really like tasting steak, I'm sorry. Or your Brussels sprouts. Don't look at me in that tone of voice. Brussels sprouts are good. Okay, how about light? Okay, imagine I could black out all of the windows and turn out all the lights, and I have my little flashlight here. Little flashlight, good. If I wanted to get very far, how about if I do this? I'm probably not going to get too far. I might kind of wander into some people over here. How about if I do this? Probably better. Why? Shows me the way. How is that actually happening with light? How does that work? I'm going to try not to blind all these people over here. How does it work? Allianz. Exactly right. It bounces off the things in front of me so that I can see them better and I can get out of the way. I can see my way. Even better, have you ever tried to help someone get somewhere in the dark? And what's the first thing we usually tend to do? We shine the flashlight at them. They're not going to get very far. We need to shine it somewhere else so that they can find their way towards the light. The challenge for us in this teaching of Jesus is, how are we going to be seasoning for the world? Not the taste of the world, the seasoning of the world, the thing that brings out and celebrates and elevates all the other flavors, right? The challenge for us in this teaching is, how are we going to be light? Light that shines and shows the way, rather than blinding with our own selves. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. And who's the you? The you are the ones who want to follow Jesus. You who live in the world all the other days outside of Sunday. In all those days, how are you shining for other people? And what are you bringing to the kitchen to enhance everybody's meal? Because I think somewhere in all that working together, there's something that Jesus is trying to teach us. So, have you talked about in your schools, what is February? What do we mark about February? Valentine's Day is in February. Black History Month? Shortest month? Yeah. Teen Dating Violence Month. I did not know that one. I'm going to hold out on two of these. I heard President's Day. School vacation. Okay, there are some other holidays that we've added to the month. So we've got President's Day, which is about the birthday of who? George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and Black History Month. Black History Month took a long time to arrive in this country. It took hundreds of years of slavery, took a civil war, it took 61 years of segregation, and then in 1926, a man named Carter Woodson decided that in the week, started with the week, this is a good lesson for us, start small. He started with a week, the week in which the nation celebrated Abraham Lincoln, saying that we should also lift up the stories and the histories of the people who were most affected by Lincoln's presidency, right? Black people who had been freed and were now finally free to build a story for themselves, a history even, when so much of their history and their story had been taken from them by other people. Black institutions, and actually a whole bunch of churches of every stripe, joined in. And it kind of carried on, kind of quietly in the background for a little while. The first Black History Month happened in 1970 at Kent State University. The adults in the room made that sound because about 4 months later, things would get really serious at Kent State University. But they set up a full month to study and talk about the history of Black people in this country. And then eventually in 1976, Gerald Ford, as the president, made this kind of a national marker. It's a weird thing for me that I didn't hear this debate when I was a kid, but I hear it some now about the wisdom of Black History Month. Some would say a month is too short a time to give to the history of a whole people. Some challenge the idea of focusing and limiting a study of history on particular people. To which, of course, we have to note that for hundreds of years, when people talked about history, when people just said history, what did they mean? The history of people who looked like me. Got to grow a beard first, right? Gosh. That was what history was for the longest time in this country. How are are we going to change that? How are we going to make that story more full? Carter Woodson knew that when you have no story, it is easy for you to be forgotten or for people to be erased. Because the story that we tell about our past shapes our future. We know this as we read the teachings of a Jewish Jesus who is steeped in the story and the history of his people. We all remember this, right? Jesus was Jewish, and he was good at it. He knew his story and his scripture from Moses and the Ten Commandments on down, and he preached to his people how the blessed were those who hungered for righteousness and told them that God was right there with them in their lives, because, in fact, Jesus was a light all of his own. Jesus was God come to shine a light on what it means to be a human. Jesus shows up to lift up the story of the people who were poor, who were hungry, whose voices weren't being heard. So when stories and history and even life itself has been erased or hidden for other people, Jesus calls us to lift them up, to lift up those stories that have been pushed aside. Not to take over the dish like too much salt, right? If it tastes like salt, you've done it wrong. To make others more visible and more welcome. And I don't know, more delicious, but that's not the right turn of phrase. The metaphor breaks down here. Jesus says he comes to fulfill the law, the story of his people. But here, with salt and light, he's inviting us to see the weight and the power of the law of Moses that he has known is in how we are with other people. That's how we fulfill the law. Jesus preaches and tells us that the ones the world least expects are actually blessed, like we said last week, and if we are to follow him, we should enhance life for others and shine on them and on each other, because we all need a little extra flavor from our friends and our family and our community, and because we all need someone to shine for us and shine on us sometimes to help us be more fully ourselves. Go and well season, folks. Go and find those folks whose voices are not being heard and lift them up and add a little flavor to that dish. And go forth and shine and shine and shine and shine. Not for yourself, but for the wonder and the beauty of this world that God has given us. Amen.